My guests are Lucia Voschel, a nurse ethicist who was one of the leaders of the effort to bring the event to Indy, and Jennifer Vines, project manager for the event. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimitswfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about issues of life and death today on No Limits in anticipation of the upcoming Before I Die Festival, which explores what it means to live and what it means to die. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Before I introduce my guest for today, I also would like to urge all of you, if you've not done so already, to make your pledge to WFYI. You can do that by calling 800-233-0020, or you can find a way to do it online at wfyi.org/give. It's important that you do so. This is radio. This is a community obligation. If we don't do it, it won't happen, period. Well, I would like to introduce Dr. Lucia Voschel, who is a nurse ethicist. I'm struggling. I only work in radio here. It's not that important to really be able to talk clearly. My guests are Dr. Lucia Voschel, who is a nurse ethicist, who's one of the leaders of the effort to bring the Before I Die Festival to Indy, and Jennifer Vines, who is project manager for the event. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Certainly. It's good to have both of you here. So tell me first what the festival is. Let's get into its origins. And then I want to drill down because it's a fascinating concept. If anybody's traveled, we've seen the Before I Die walls. I actually was just in Asheville, North Carolina a couple of weeks ago, and they had one up there. And the things people write, I think, are just absorbing. But Lucia, I'll start with you.
So I will say that the event, it's not an original idea in the sense that I heard about it. It was the first Before I Die Festival happened in Cardiff, Wales, a few years ago. And it happened in part because of an individual who had a family experience that was not what they had hoped for. And so she's Jenny Klitzinger. She's in Cardiff, Wales. She's a journalism professor, which I think you'll appreciate, and she connected with colleagues at the university, and they decided that a way to create conversation around death would be to use arts-related events. So instead of the medical approach, which is you need to have an advanced care plan, they decided that they would create opportunities for safe space to spark conversation around what people would want when they died. And I think it's an amazing and a wonderful opportunity because if your first conversation about what you want when you're going to die is with a doctor when you get a terminal diagnosis, it's kind of too late.
Or you're a estate planner or whatever.
Either one.
There's not a whole lot of poetry or romance to those conversations.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
So, Jennifer, if you could, walk me through what the festival is going to be here in Indy.
Sure. So we've got involvement by Spirit in Place. So sometimes we describe it as kind of a mini Spirit in Place, multiple events happening all over the city at different locations with different, focus. So fine arts, academic discussions, book discussions, film screenings, all of the above.
And you say film screenings. What sort of films are we talking about?
I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with Dr. Atul Gawande's book, Being Mortal. So the PBS Frontline special that's based upon that will be screened as part of the festival. In addition, we've got a documentary that's going to be screened that shows a hospice program within a prison setting. And that'll be screened at Marion.
And all of this starts on Friday, right?
Correct. We have one event on Thursday, but the bulk of it is Friday through Sunday.
Okay, what's the event on Thursday?
So this is Lucia. The event on Thursday has to be, it was a special request. The Fairbanks Center for Medical Ethics, which is part of what I do, they did a panel presentation on perspectives of miracles. And we have a Baptist preacher, a secular humanist, and a Quaker who is a palliative care physician, all speaking on what it means to be waiting for a miracle in a medical context. And they will reprise that presentation at Marion University at noon on Thursday.
Okay. And walk me through then what the rest of the weekend looks like.
Wow. Well, there's a lot going on. So the IMA has, I believe, three different events. We've got an exhibit at the Kurt Vonnegut Library. We've got a Before I Die wall, which you alluded to earlier. Crown Hill will be installing that, and it will actually remain up, I believe, through June. On Sunday, they're going to have a tour of focusing on some inspiring individuals that are buried at Crown Hill who kind of made the most of their time here. Not necessarily all famous people, but a mix of people. So
starting on Friday, we have a special event because one of the things that I need to celebrate is the festival is possible because of a generous gift to the IU School of Nursing. We had a benefactor who wanted to improve communication around palliative and end-of-life care, and as part of that project, we created this community engagement event. So the funds from that gift have actually made the festival possible, both to have Jennifer, and on Friday morning, we have a very special event. Bishop Coates from California, who is an African-American preacher, will be hosting an event on Friday morning for clergy. The importance of being, let's talk about death, the importance of the role of clergy in supporting people when they face critical illness. She'll also do a special reservation only, and it is filled, but an event, sort of a workshop, working with clergy. On Friday at noon, there's a special event at the IU Simon Cancer Center. The music therapy program will be sharing David Bowie's album and using that as a way to spark conversation. We've had an amazing event through the Stutz Artist Gallery that opened on March 25th. Their closing is actually on Friday the 15th. So if anybody hasn't seen it, they have just a few more days to get to it. And on Friday evening, we will be hosting a death cafe at the gallery beginning at 5 o'clock. And there are, and it's funny, Jennifer and I were talking about this.
If I might interrupt, what is a death cafe?
I'm going to let Jennifer explain that because she's responsible for bringing it to Indy.
So Death Cafe is a worldwide movement. It started in Britain. It's basically just a place where people can gather to talk about death, anything about death whatsoever that compels them, not bereavement counseling. Mm-hmm. It's just meant to be that place where you could kind of bounce things off of another group of people. It really caught on, and within a few years' time, there have been, I think, close to 3,000 death cafes all over the world, Southeast Asia, Australia, United States, Europe, et cetera. So I am one of the individuals that started Death Cafe Indy, and we are now coming into our third year, and we meet every other month at the Athenaeum to talk about death. So,
if you are just joining us, we are talking about issues of life and death in anticipation of this weekend's Before I Die Festival. It's the first of its kind here in Indianapolis, but there have been other Before I Die festivals in other parts of the world. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So, and I should ask, we're dealing with the logistics of the event. I want to talk about the larger sort of subject and why these festivals and the walls and all of that are resonating in the way that they are with people. But I'm assuming, is there a cost to attend if anyone wants to come? Or is it on a kind of an a la carte? There are some free events. There are some that are not.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yes. The vast majority are free. There are a couple that do have a charge, but the vast majority is free, which is great. And that's what we had hoped for, to make it very accessible to the community.
Which are the two that have the couple?
So there are gallery talks at the IMA, which would just be included in the normal admission to get into the IMA. And then there is a
Say it's free if you're a member.
That's correct. And then the Historical Society is actually doing something as part of their normal genealogy programs that they offer. That one is free for students and a reduced cost for members of IHS.
Of the Historical Society. So those are the only events that have a cost if you're a public. And is there a place that people can go, a URL or something like that, where they can find the calendar schedule of events?
Absolutely, Jennifer. Absolutely. So it's tinyurl.com and then the / BIDF Indy. So
BID before I die Indy.
Fest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. BID festival.
BIDF.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk because, again, Asheville, North Carolina is not a huge place. And yet I walked down street there, and there is a Before I Die wall up, and people have written all over it, and some intensely personal things. What is it, do you think, that is prompting it? Well, and I'm going to take this so that everybody knows. I'm going to take this larger subject of why is it we, for so long, accept and, you know, so the very rigid, formalized, you know, speaking with your doctor or speaking with your estate planner or whatever, except in those, why is it that we have had such a hard time talking about death and talking about approaching death when it is coming? Lucia, I'll start with you on that one.
So I will say, first of all, when I started telling people that we were going to have a Before I Die festival, invariably the response I would get was, a what? Yeah. A what? Excuse me? And I had a number of people say, well, shouldn't you call it something else? I mean, it's so threatening. It's so scary. And as the conversation unfolded, virtually every person I spoke to had a story about death. Every one of them. And it's because nobody gets to talk about these things in a way that really matters. So when you ask, why are we stuck in this? So I'm in healthcare, and I will tell you, everybody loves a great miracle story. We all want to be the miracle. We want to be the one that survives. And so that's part of it. Technology has allowed us, people live way longer than they ever have in the past. And death is pretty much removed from people's lives. If you think 100, even 50 years ago, it was not uncommon for family members to die at home. That's just how it happened. And that's not how it happens now, despite the fact that people would rather not die in hospitals. Many more people die there because it's just how it unfolds. So I would say it's hard to talk about it because we're unfamiliar with it.
When you say that everyone you talk to, everyone has a death story, what sort of stories are we talking about?
Oh, they run the gamut. In general, I think when people, they know that I'm in healthcare, and part of what I do is talk with people when things don't go well, when they have a family member who's been in the hospital and they've had to make a difficult decision. Invariably, those are the stories that people tell. They didn't know what their family member wanted, and somebody asked them, hey, what do you want us to do? What would they want? And I think that's why people have a need to talk about it, because they were traumatized by this difficult decision.
Well, and when I look at the walls, though, I mean, a lot of this is not so much about what I want to do with my belongings or even what my end-of-life decisions are. You know, when or where, you know, I want the plug pulled or any of those things. They're much more about regrets, mm-hmm. unfulfilled desires. Mm-hmm. What is it that so makes the act of writing that on a wall so powerful, Jennifer?
I really think, and this kind of dovetails with the Death Cafe movement, that when you really stop to think about, okay, yes, my time is finite, mm-hmm. it starts to bring up those goals, regrets, you know, the things that we know that we need to make the time to do, but when we're caught up in the day-to-day routine, you know, those can fall by the wayside. So I think it's just a very tangible way to kind of face, okay, yes, I know my time is finite. I don't like to think about it, but I know that logically. What would I like to do before that time runs out?
Have you written on one of the walls yourself?
I have. The artist, Candy Chang, who started it, the mm-hmm. first one was in New Orleans. I'm from Louisiana, so mm-hmm. I have written on one in New Orleans, and very excited to write on the one in Crown Hill.
If I might ask real quickly, what did you write?
Oh, gosh.
On the one. I mean, because I'm surprised, again, at the intimacy of some of the expressions.
I'm honestly blanking on what I wrote. I'm not trying to be
Well, I'll tell you what, we're about to go to a break, so I'll come back to you after that, and I'm going to ask Lucia the same question. If you are just joining us, we are talking about life and death in anticipation of the upcoming Before I Die Festival here in Indianapolis. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881, email nolimits at WFYI.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. My guests are Dr. Lucia Voschel and Jennifer Vines, both of whom are associated with the event. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the Before I Die Festival that is coming up this weekend here in Indy. It is an event sponsored by the IUPUI School of Nursing in partnership with Spirit in Place that encourages people to think about what it means to live and what it means to die. My guests are Dr. Lucia Voschel, who is a nurse ethicist, who was one of the leaders of the effort to bring the event to Indy, and Jennifer Vines, who is project manager for the event. See, Lucia, I got through it that time. We were talking about how her name is a tongue twister during the break. And I should say to our audience, if you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. So, Jennifer, have you been able to recall what you wrote on the wall?
So, I don't recall what I wrote on the one in New Orleans, but actually at the Stutz Gallery, they did have Before I Die chalk wall as well. And I wrote that I would like to eventually make it over to Belgium to sample farmhouse ales.
Okay.
Yes.
And, Lucia, have you written on the wall?
So I've written a cosmic world hunger sort of thing, which is before I die, I want to live in a world that's at peace, which is mm-hmm. a pipe dream, but everybody should have it. And I would say what I hope to write on the wall at the Crown Hill Cemetery is before I die, I want to live in the world where people can talk about death and not be afraid.
What is it? I mean, about death. That even contemplating makes us so terrified, because that sounds like a simple and even naive question, but I don't see it that way, because when you think about it, it is a universal experience. It's not like we are going to be, each one of us as an individual is going to be the first one to experience it. We know that it is coming from the moment that we really achieve any kind of consciousness, understanding of life, and yet it is still very, very difficult for us to talk about in any way that, isn't either melodramatic or, even to some degree with the setup here, humorous. The ways that we deal with it, we don't talk about it real easily in matter-of-fact terms. Lucia.
So it's funny that you said humor. My family knows that I try very hard not to be disrespectful, but I am fairly irreverent when it comes to talking about death mm-hmm. For a number of reasons. First of all, people in the throes of grief, if they laugh, it's healing. Mm-hmm. So that's an important detail. I think certainly in healthcare, when people face difficult decisions, there are no do-overs. Mm-hmm. When you're dead, you're dead. Even though everybody does it, we really don't know what happens. So I think it's scary. I think people invariably, there's a great deal of sadness around the loss that you experience when somebody is gone from your life. And it's really hard to let yourself go there and talk about that. I think the other thing that makes it really hard is to a large extent, death has become orchestrated. The fact that we're even talking about what I want, what are my end of life wishes, the fact that, you know, we have this illusion that we can all control this is really quite humorous when you think about it. We all want to be in control. And in fact, we may not get the kind of death that we want, even if we express our wishes.
Jennifer, you say you've been taking part in sort of these death cafe conversations for 3 years now. Talk to me about what the conversations are like at those cafes. I mean, what, first place, is it done over a lunch hour? Is it an evening thing? Is it, when do they take place?
So we meet on Sunday afternoons, and really the main rule is that there are no rules as far as subject matter. But the other rule is that you have to have cake. You know, to kind of ease the way into the conversation, it's nice to have a cake and coffee. But I tell you, every topic that you could ever imagine has come up, and it's meant to be a place of no judgment. If someone says something that you completely disagree with, you're free to pipe in and give the alternate viewpoint. But there's been lots of humor. I think people would be surprised at how much laughter goes on during the Death Cafe. But certainly very serious life events, or seeing a loved one go through, you know, the process in a less than desirable fashion. And that affects people, and they want to kind of talk about it or make some plans so that they hopefully don't have an experience they may have witnessed with someone else.
What drew you to start and go to the death cafes?
Well, I had been reading about the movement. NPR had covered it, New York Times, and I thought it was fascinating. But it really was not occurring to me to start one here in Indy. Luckily, I happened to sit down beside a person at a staff training who had decided that she was going to start it. And I don't even remember how it came up. But once it came up, I basically said, I will help you do whatever needs to be done. Let's make this happen. So
when you went to the first one, what was that like? What was going through your head?
It was kind of scary because, you know, we didn't know, are people going to show up? I mean, Nuvo had done a piece, and so we thought, okay, hopefully people will show up. I think we had had maybe 12 or 13 RSVPs, and 24, 25 people showed up. So that was kind of a nice validation that, you know, there was a need for this forum. But yeah, we really didn't know what to expect, and hoped that there would not be lulls in conversation, and there aren't. Once people start talking, it really just, the 2 hours goes very quickly.
Do they talk about primarily, and Lucia, I'm going to ask you to chime in on this, because obviously you have these kinds of conversations on a frequent basis too. Do they talk primarily about sort of their feelings of, however mixed they might be in terms of dealing with other people's deaths, loved ones' deaths? Do they talk about, you know, their own complicated feelings about their own eventual deaths? What is it that sort of creates the tension in the discussions?
Well, I mean, it goes from very nuts and bolts to philosophical. You know, some people are definitely talking about what they think happens or doesn't happen. Some people have curiosity or questions about, you know, what happens to the body if I choose to be embalmed or not embalmed. And we actually do have a mortician that comes regularly and can kind of answer those very practical questions about processes or legal options even. The legal landscape does vary from state to state as to what you can do. Connected to that. So it really does run the gamut of, you know, mundane to very esoteric.
Lucia, what sort of questions do people bring to you about death?
So while I will be the host for the Death Cafe on the 15th, the conversations that I typically have with people are in the context of some sort of medical event, and or I do a lot of teaching. So I teach nursing students, medical students, a number of people. So I think a lot of people have questions about the dying process. People want to know that they'll be cared for, that they'll be comfortable, that they will have, for many people, it's important to have family and friends around them. I will say that you know, for healthcare providers, one of the hardest things to do is to care for a patient whose family and the patient themselves don't want to be surrounded by family and friends when they die. I think that sort of, whether we know it or not, in our society, we have created this idealized what happens when people die. If you read the obituaries, it's not uncommon
surrounded
to see
family
and friends. And I have said...
even if it's only metaphoric.
Right. I have said jokingly, I want to see the obituary that says, died alone with nobody there just the way he wanted it.
Yeah.
You know, like, there are a lot of people who are completely uncomfortable with that sense. So I think for me, when I have conversations with people, it runs the gamut. It's really much more practical. And of course, in my role doing ethics, it's in a much more real moment when people are invariably facing a very difficult decision.
Is the fear there? I mean, and normally I try not to talk about my own stuff on the show because the subject is always the subject, and that should be the focus of the program. And I'll take this very small detour and ask the audience's indulgence for just a moment. But the thought of dying does not freak me out all that much. It is the thought of the stuff that leads up to the dying, mm-hmm. of being incapable, of not being, in some cases, not even being able to identify or interact with the people I love, all of that. Some of it is, to me, that doesn't strike me as much of a definition of living. But some of it is also, for example, that's not the way I want my children to remember me, kind of stuff. Are a lot of these conversations not so much about the death itself, but the run-up to the death?
Yeah, I think, when people are asked to make a decision in healthcare, they feel this burden. And I know I had a very dear colleague whose husband was actually in the emergency room, and I had the opportunity to be with her when it happened. And I knew what was going to happen. I knew at some point the doctors were going to come out and they were going to say something along the lines of, things aren't going well, and we might have to come and ask you to make a decision. And I said to her, when they ask you that, what that means is that's their recommendation, that it's time to stop, that they're trying to tell you that things aren't going well. You know, in medicine, sometimes we forget to just speak plainly. It's very difficult. I think modern medicine has made it very difficult for physicians to be clear and direct and say, this isn't going well, and I think it's time to stop. You know, and in a crisis, you wouldn't want somebody to just come out and say, well, we're done. I mean, there's this delicate dance that happens.
Is it that way primarily in Western cultures, or is that a universal thing?
No, it varies, and I think I've been to international ethics conferences, and while ethics is more than death and dying, certainly it is the most pressing thing that we're asked to support healthcare providers in. It varies from culture to culture, and so I would say it depends on where you are.
Because it's a very sort of American thing to say, I will never, ever quit.
Yeah.
But sometimes quitting is the wisest thing you can do.
Yeah, that is it's actually very true.
We are talking about matters of life and death in anticipation of the Before I Die Festival that's going to be here in Indianapolis this weekend. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, locate us on Twitter at WFYI, or do what a listener named Rosemary has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Rosemary, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. I love your program.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm listening with fascination as I am reading a very interesting book that I heard about on another NPR show called Immortality, The Quest to Live Forever and How It Drives Civilization. The author is Stephen Cave. And what you just talked about, John, was what he describes as the mortality paradox. Everyone dies, and we know this intellectually, but intellectually, we can't fathom ourselves no longer existing or being. And I think that this ties into the whole conversation that you're having with your guests, who are wonderful, that death is part of life, but we can't, and I think particularly in American culture, we can't fathom ourselves no longer existing. And so I think, how we die is as important as what happens to us after, and everyone believes something different, or religions, you know, drive us in a certain belief system of what happens to us after death. But the caring of the healthcare professionals and the knowledge that they're bringing, your guests are bringing to us, I think is just phenomenal. And so that we, you know, get real. We're all going to die. We can't really wrap our heads around it, but it is a reality. Make it our exit as wonderful or peaceful or loving as we possibly can.
Thank you very much for the call and for the sentiments, Rosemary. And thank you, by the way, for supporting WFYI and NPR.
Thank you.
Thanks. So, again, we're talking about this kind of conundrum here, and that everybody dies. But, you know, what Rosemary is talking about is that there is also a kind of I'm putting words in her mouth and probably words in that author's mouth. But there is a kind of narcissism that accompanies all of this. Lucia's laughing, but there is this sense that, oh, I am aware of this vast world, but I really can't imagine it going on without me. How much of sort of dealing with that contradiction is part of coming to terms with death, Lucia?
I think it's a huge part of it. As you were talking, I was thinking about if you just watch TV and look at commercials and look at all of the, you know, wrinkle cream, the get your body back in shape, the you can look like a 25-year-old when you're 65. I mean, we idolize people who seem to be the fountain of youth. And yet, so some of this is
death. Even though they're often kind of creepy when you're up close
to
them.
I'm not going to say that. So, I mean, I think the bit about aging, how do we age gracefully, is part of it. I think, you know, again, people die at all ages. And I remember one of my sisters reading the obituaries and saying, oh, my God, I'm now at an age where if I died, it wouldn't be a tragedy. You know, when you read the newspaper and someone's less than 20, certainly when a child dies, when you get 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, they died. You know, it's so this we're just not geared to think about the world without us. So I think I do remember I used to tell people the lessons of 9/11 we embraced and then forgot pretty quickly. And for me, the lesson for 9/11 is and that would be, of course, the World Trade Center and the rest of that is your life can end in a moment. And everybody every day should take the opportunity to make sure that the big picture business is taken care of. If there are people in your life that need to know that you value and support them and you're proud of them, don't wait to tell them. And I get that some of that's cultural, but I think one reason people don't want to talk about death is, you know, they don't have any hard conversations.
Jennifer, how much of this, and Lucia alluded to this earlier, is about control? The fact that we we think we can manage all of this when death is a reminder that, no, we really aren't in charge.
That's a huge part of it. Definitely, I would say, a recurring theme at Death Cafe. Yeah, the illusion of control. I mean, you know, on any given day, you know, I could be hit by a car. Something unexpected could happen. I do think, given kind of a standard, okay, I live this really long life. I have some knowledge of a terminal diagnosis. I have some time to make plans. I mean, you know, that would all be fine, well, and good. And I think we should be prepared for that sort of death. But, you know, fact of the matter is that, you know, for a lot of people, there's not going to be that time. And it seems a little morbid, but thinking about it every day, at least briefly on some level, can then hasten some positive action, I think, in your day-to-day life.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about life and death here on No Limits in anticipation of the Before I Die Festival that will be in Indy this weekend. It's an event that encourages people to think about what it means to live and what it means to die. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dr. Lucia Voschel, who is a nurse ethicist, who's one of the leaders of the effort to bring this event to Indy, and Jennifer Vines, who's project manager for the event. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Before I Die Festival today on No Limits. It's a festival, an event that encourages people to think about what it means to live and what it means to die. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Dr. Lucia Voschel, who is a nurse ethicist, who is one of the leaders of the effort to bring the Before I Die Festival to Indy, and Jennifer Vines, who's project manager for the event. We've gotten an email from a listener named Tamara, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, again, you can find us at NoLimitsWFYI.org. She says, "Hello, I am part of the No One Dies Alone program at Eskenazi Hospital. The biggest reaction I receive is, how can you do that? It is so sad. I could never sit with someone I don't know that is dying. I don't think people realize what a beautiful experience being there for someone who is dying can be. Being mindful of what someone else needs for the time you are with them brings a sense of calm and peace to your own life. We live in such a high-stressed, constantly busy life. Being there for those that are dying can improve our lives as well." Jennifer, you're nodding your head. My instinct was to go with Lucia on that one, but since you're nodding your head, I'm going to go with you.
I'm very familiar with the program, and the palliative care team at Eskenazi does an amazing job. Karen, who is the spiritual advisor on that team, heads up No One Dies Alone, and it's an amazing program. Yes, certainly, I think it's difficult work, but it's very important for patients who may not have anyone available to them during that time to sit with the patient. So I actually had a friend pass away just a couple of weeks ago at Eskenazi, and I spent much time with her in those final days. And being able to see the palliative care team in action and firsthand was just really life-changing. It's amazing work that they're doing.
Lucia, does it diminish the quality of our lives that we are at some level so distanced and detached from death these days?
I would say to some extent, yes. I also need to comment, you know, listening to that email. So my clinical practice before I did ethics full time was neonatal intensive care.
Yeah.
So I took care of babies who died and their families. And to be able to be with a family and support them through what is undoubtedly one of the most traumatic events. You can bring peace and you can help them begin healing. And I think to be distant from death, to be afraid of it, really does diminish what you can do and where you can be in the world. There's such a need for people to be able to talk about and to be present when somebody's experiencing that. I can tell you when families experience the loss of a baby, no one knows what to say to them. No one knows how to talk to them. And they become very isolated because people are just uncomfortable talking about death. And it's such a tragedy. People just need to be able to talk and be heard.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about questions of life and death here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what Josh has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I kind of want to talk about something that you mentioned earlier about how you yourself you weren't really scared about dying. You were kind of comfortable with it. And with all due respect, I think that that's coming from someone who probably hasn't been at death's door. Like I myself, I had a heart attack when I was 29 playing basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, you come to find out I had a heart defect since birth. But when I was lying there, I mean, I was scared to death. Like I was, no pun intended. I was, you know, I was praying, you know, and I wasn't even religious. But, you know, my take from that was dying is the last thing I want to do. Is like, I am not comfortable with it, you know, no matter, even if I'm 99. It's, you know, just when I was there, you know, thinking I was going to die, that was the scariest thing that I could ever imagine. And, you know, I mean, if a lot of people are comfortable with thinking about dying, you know, in the way that you were describing, that, you know, I'm at peace with it, you know, what have you, I just, they're like, well, you know, that's great and all, but man, when you're there, it's scary, and believe me, you'll do anything you can to get that extra, you know, second or extra couple of days.
Oh, I don't want to, yeah. And I don't want to leave you with the wrong impression, Josh. I'm not looking forward to that moment. I like being here among my loved ones and all of that, but you know, when we talk about levels of fear, that's at least where my greatest fear is. That's what I was speaking to. But anyhow, I'm going to say a couple of things here. One, thank you very much for the call. And two, very glad you are still with us.
Oh, great. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Mm-hmm.
So I will say, in response to the caller, it's not uncommon for people to want to hang on to every moment and want to push in the healthcare setting. And as a 29-year-old who had what was obviously a recoverable event, that is amazing, and it's wonderful. That is one of the miracles of modern medicine. He is one of the people who's around where we can say, you know, were it 20, 30 years previously, he might not have been here to tell us about it. I think when we see people who push and push and push and then can no longer speak for themselves, and you have to turn to somebody else and say, what should we do? That's when it becomes really, really, really hard. So if you're able to speak for yourself and push as hard as you want, we'll help you. I think, you know, one of the things I mentioned to you earlier is in the middle of this festival, we placed it strategically.
Okay.
And that is Saturday, April 16th, is National Healthcare Decisions Day. And that's a movement that's been around for 8 or 9 years now. And the goal is to have conversation and hopefully complete documents that put in writing what your wishes are. So,
well, and it strikes me that this is that both, you know, the day on Saturday, the festival itself, and so many other things that we talk about now, like the even the farm to table movement or things like that. It's really about trying to close the distance between people and the world in which they live in, the physical, natural world with its rules and its rhythms in a way that and I think we all probably would agree that modern life has taken us away from at some level. Again, Jennifer, you're the one nodding your head that I can see, so I'm going to go with you first on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're caught up in obligations and duty and going to work and all the things that we have to do to be productive members of society. But and I think that's why the Death Cafe movement just took off, because it's this dedicated time. You know, there's not going to be any distractions, and you could sit and you could actually, you know, unpack some of this stuff with a group of strangers, which seems kind of on the face of it odd. But I think sometimes people are more comfortable talking about it with strangers than they are with their own family. Hopefully we can get them past that into the next step, which is to actually have the conversation with those who need to know your wishes.
I would say also, you know, what we talked about earlier, the being afraid to talk about it until it happens to you, until it happens to someone in your, and then suddenly it's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've said all along that how people die in this country is going to start changing pretty quickly, because if you think about how babies were born 50 years ago, men were not in the delivery room. That didn't happen. And trust me, they were not invited there by doctors and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
They were invited there by women. Those women are now having to care for adult children, their aging parents, and they're just not going to put up with this. They are going to say, all right, look, this is, you know, we need to be better at this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that that's what, when it starts to hit you personally, that's when people start to pay attention to what the possibilities are.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Mary, and if you'd like to send us an email and join this conversation, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Mary writes, my husband and I lost our 2-year-old son to leukemia. During the final weeks of his life, we were faced with deciding the type of treatment, if any, we wanted for him. The situation was presented as this. There is less than 5% chance that we will be able to achieve remission. I heard, this is the end. It is time to prepare for death. My husband heard, there is a 5% chance of remission. We cannot give up. This was an incredibly challenging time, and it required the help of a very gifted counselor to walk us through this conversation with each other. Thankfully, she helped us to understand that helping our son to die was not giving up on him. We were parenting, loving him through the most difficult stage in his life. He died in my arms. It was a painful gift. Mary, thank you very much for sharing that with us.
I have to echo that. Mary, thank you for sharing that, because not many parents can talk about it. And that's a great gift for you to share that with a broader group of people. And I'm glad for the support that you received.
But it does illustrate, you know, again, same words were used here, but mm-hmm. two people
oh, absolutely.
Who loved this little boy very, very much, clearly, heard two different things and responded two different ways, mm-hmm. which is part of the reason these conversations are so important.
Actually, what her email illustrates more than anything else is you have to keep the conversation going. I think we experience this all the time in healthcare. That's exactly right. You say one thing and it's heard two entirely different ways. And thankfully, they got help to come together and talk about what it meant. That's the gift. And again, that's being able to talk about it. They got help with a counselor. It was facilitated. That's amazing. Because the worst thing we can do is stop talking about it.
We are talking about death and how we deal with it in life here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Lou, welcome to the program.
Hi. I really appreciate the conversation you're having today. My husband of 41 years, who was 60 years old, passed away very suddenly 2 days ago.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Lou.
I appreciate that. We are dealing with it. My sons and I are dealing with this because we had these conversations regularly. I was an x-ray tech for 40 years, so understood a lot of medical end of things, so I knew what was, you know, going on at the end in the hospital. He was in the ER. Kurt, my husband, worked for 10 years as part of that time as a hospital chaplain and part of that time as a family services counselor for Indiana Organ Procurement Organization. Thus, we did have a lot of conversations about end of life just by merit of the work he was doing. Even though we were somewhat negligent being 60 years old and not having our living will, et cetera, you know, a funeral plan paid for, it's being fairly easy the last few days to walk through these things because we had talked about this so often, and I knew what his wishes were. After a half hour of CPR and understanding what the doctors were telling me and that there just was no hope, I was able, and I did, make the decision for them to stop. It is so important to talk about things with each other, with your family. And a little earlier, you were talking about dealing with it, with things with humor. We, part of his memorial service will include images of burning Viking ships. We'll have a clip of a Maori haka, the Maori warriors thing they do for dead warriors. We will be having a celebration service of his life because he had a good sense of humor, and we will be including funny stories and good memories and the things that he would have liked to have seen. So, boy, I just can't say it often enough. Talk with your partner, talk with your family about end-of-life issues because it can hit you when you least expect it.
Lou, thank you very much for sharing this with us. It sounds like it is wisdom that that was painfully acquired, but it is wisdom nonetheless, and
thank
it is a gift to share it with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lou. You know, I have to say she was in a family experience that made it possible to talk about it whether you wanted to or not by virtue of their profession. If you think about what the festival is here to provide this weekend, it's arts-related events to help people have conversations who don't live and work in the field.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Mary who says that speaker just talked about youth culture and the aging process. Have we become more death-denying in the last century versus, say, the 1800s? Thank you, Mary. Lucia?
Absolutely. So not only are we more death-denying and death-defying, the good news is modern medicine has made that possible. The bad news is modern medicine can't do everything. So I don't know that we're more or less because I wasn't around back then, but I can absolutely tell you that it's possible for people to deny the fact that they're going to die. It's not useful, but it's possible.
So with this festival, what do you think will be positive outcomes from it? What do you hope that it will accomplish? I'm going to give each of you a crack at that. Jennifer, you first.
Sure. I think, you know, first and foremost, just decreasing the taboo of having the conversations. Certainly, we want people to take some action in talking to loved ones, completing some paperwork. There will be opportunities during the festival, for example, to get free assistance on healthcare representative forms. Very easy, painless, and get it done. But also, then going further from that, I think I'll let Lucia take it from there.
Yeah, Lucia.
So I would say, if you come to any event, we will have information cards that we want people to fill out. Three short questions. Basically, did this help you? Were you motivated to talk about it? Did you get the resources that you needed? And then there's a, you know, give us your address. And we will follow up with people and ask them, you know, a number of people have said, are you going to do this festival again? Please let us get through the first one. Please let us do that.
Before you make the commitment.
Yeah, before we make a commitment. But I would say my hope is that people come to these events and they have conversation. That is the single, you know, the last caller. That is the single most important thing you can do. Even if you write out a document, it'll never cover every eventuality. You need to know who your loved one is as a person, and then you'll be able to make decisions based on who they are, not the minute decision you're asked to make.
And we have got a lot of calls, emails. Obviously, people are hungry to talk about this that we're not going to be able to get to right now, so because we're almost out of time. So with our last remaining seconds here, Jennifer, could you give people the URL again where they can get information to attend the festival? Because clearly there is a hunger to have these kinds of conversations.
Absolutely. It's tinyurl.com/BIDFindy. And then we are on Facebook as well. So if you go to Facebook and search for the Before I Die Festival, you will find us there.
And there's Twitter.
And
there's
Twitter
as well. So I'd like to thank both of you. I'd like to thank my guests, Lucia Voschel and Jennifer Vines, for what has been an illuminating and at times moving conversation. I thank you both for that. I'd also like to thank our listeners for sharing their stories. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.